This episode of Love to Sew is brought to you by Chicken Boots. Chicken Boots creates unique bags and cases for crafters that have function at the forefront of their design.
Check them out at chickenbootsusa.com and get 15% off your next order with the code LOVETOSEW15. This offer expires November 8th, 2018. That's chickenbootsusa.com, code LOVETOSEW15. And now, on to the show. Da 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 da. Da 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 da.
Hello and welcome. I'm Helen.
And I'm Caroline.
And we love to sew. This is a podcast for makers where we talk about sewing a handmade wardrobe and bring you interviews with inspiring creatives and small business owners in our community.
Today we are chatting with Carolyn Norman, the blogger behind Diary of a Sewing Fanatic and the columnist behind Ask Carolyn in Sewn magazine. Carolyn has been sewing for almost 50 years and shares loads of amazing stories with us. She truly believes that sewing is art and embraces her own creative passion for fashion, fabrics, and sharing her knowledge with others.
She also embraces her fabric stash as a fabric collection, which I love.
So do I.
Fabric collection.
Hello, Carolyn. Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you for inviting me. I'm so thrilled to be here.
Oh, we're really thrilled to have you. Let's start off with you introducing yourself to our listeners. Can you tell them who you are and where you live?
I am Carolyn. I author the blog Diary of a Sewing Fanatic, and I write the column Ask Carolyn for Sewn magazine. I live in New Jersey in the United States.
And we are so excited to ask you about your column for Sewn magazine. We have lots of questions about that coming up.
Okay.
But first off, we always like to ask our listeners how they learn to sew and when they learn to sew. So can you tell us a little bit about your sewing journey?
Sure. I learned to sew at 11. I loved Barbie dolls. I got my first one at 7. And whenever I received my weekly allowance, I would head to Woolworths, which is no longer in existence. And I would buy doll clothes for my Barbie because she had to be the best dressed Barbie on the block. So I spent the summer with my grandmother. I spent most summers with my grandmother. They owned a farm. And we would go to town on Saturdays. And I would head to Woolworths like normal with my weekly allowance. And I would head over to Barbie Land. And this particular Saturday, my grandmother stopped me and asked me to go with her to the sewing section. And she showed me the book. It was a simplicity pattern book. She opened it up to the back and it had pages of Barbie doll clothes. She asked me to pick one. We pulled it out of the cabinet. Then she took me home and she pulled an old dress of hers that she had thrown in the recycle. It wasn't called recycle then, but it was the recycle bin. And she showed me a few hand stitches. And my cousin and I spent the rest of the summer tearing that dress apart and making doll clothes. And when she realized that I was really interested, she gave me another dress. So when I got home, I went outside to play with the other little kids on the block. And I pulled out all my new Barbie clothes. And they were in awe of what my Barbie doll had to wear. And that feeling of being able to just make my doll anything is really what ignited my passion for sewing.
Oh, that is such a beautiful story. My aunt used to make Barbie doll clothes for me and I loved every single piece. They're just so much fun. And I love that you learned to sew from your grandmother.
Yes. My mother cannot sew at all.
Oh, really?
Not at all.
So you started off hand sewing Barbie clothes. When did the sewing clothes for yourself come into play?
I sewed Barbie clothes, I guess, for 2 years by hand. Then I went to school and they had a sewing class and I joined the sewing class. My mother realized that I was pretty interested in it. And one of the things I asked for Christmas was a sewing machine. And back then, Sears had this amazing sewing department. So she picked one out. It was a general basic sewing machine. It sewed back and forth and a zigzag stitch. And I got it for Christmas. And I haven't stopped sewing since then. And that was my 11th year.
So how long have you been sewing for, if you don't mind me asking?
Okay, I'm doing the math in my head. 49 years. Does that make 49? Me 60? Does 49 plus 11 make me 60?
Yeah.
49 years.
Wow, that is amazing. And I am so excited to learn all about your journey over the years and how that sort of shaped you, because it's not often that we get to talk to someone that's been sewing for almost 50 years. So that is so cool. I wanted to ask you how you got started blogging. Helen and I both really enjoy your blog, Diary of a Sewing Fanatic. So can you tell us how that got its start?
First, thank you for enjoying the blog. I really appreciate everyone who takes time out of their busy lives and read my sewing ramblings, is what I call them. So I really appreciate everyone who stops and reads and leaves a comment or references it or points to it. I really appreciate that because it's a lot of work. So that's one thing. And then the second thing is that I was on a sewing board. I believe it was called Sewing World. It's now Stitchers Guild. And on that board, I met some amazing women who sewed. I mean, my sewing like jumped levels from the participation on that board. But one of them, Liana, started a sewing blog. And the thing about speaking on the boards was that you had a limit. You could only say so much. You had to stay on topic. You couldn't go on and on and on. And when Liana did her sewing blog, her first blog post, she got to explain a little more about why she did what she did. And that really intrigued me. And then someone said, oh, it's really easy to start a blog. All you have to do is go to Blogger. And Blogger walks you through the steps so simply that I started blogging. I started blogging with just my imagination, what I wanted to say about what I was sewing, and a point and shoot camera. I didn't even have a really fancy camera. And sometimes I even used one of the disposable ones, because at that time you could take it in and they would put the pictures on a disc. So then I could put the disc in my computer and then upload the pictures. So my very first pictures were not great, because I would tell my daughter to, you know, take a picture, and she'd take whatever she thought was good. And we didn't have the ability to retake, but that's how my blog started.
That is so awesome. And it's kind of proof that you really don't need a lot to start a blog. We've mentioned this before on the show. If you can just take photos on your phone and make something really simple, if you want to get into blogging, it's really not that difficult. And it's really fun. So I'm curious, what was the motivation for you to start your blog? Because you mentioned your friend Liana explained why she wanted to start a blog. But for you, did it start off as more of like a personal journal, or did you want to connect with other sewing people online? What was the motivation?
I wanted to talk in more than five sentences about why I was making stuff is really the motivation. I really wanted to be able to say I chose this fabric and write a paragraph about it. Or I went to Fabric Mart and I saw all this amazing fabric and I had to buy some, and here's some of what I bought. I wanted to be able to say things in more than five sentences.
That makes a lot of sense. I think that same thing is happening today with social media, where people get this little caption on their Instagram post. But if you have a blog, you have this opportunity to share so much more information and really helpful information for people. So I think it's great, because you never know what you're going to stumble on online. And it's fantastic to have people like you sharing so much valuable information about their projects.
Well, I think that's the most interesting part of a person's project. I think the pictures are nice, and I like Instagram, and I follow a lot of people on Instagram, but I really like the backstories of why you decided to make what you're making, why you chose that fabric, why you chose that style, what it means to you. Those are the stories that I like, and why I like blogging, and why I still follow a lot of bloggers.
Yeah, me too. And how long have you been blogging for?
Oh my God, 12 years.
Wow. Oh my gosh. You're definitely one of the first sewing bloggers that I am aware of online. And did you find that people were discovering you right away? Like, and did you meet people through your blog?
No. No. I didn't get a good blog following, I think, until 3 or 4 years in. At the beginning, it wasn't about how many people followed you. It was more about getting to say what you want to say and put and take pictures and put out there what you were making. It was more about sharing your love of the craft than it was about likes and followers and nice pictures and backgrounds. It was just about the love of the craft.
Yeah. And that really does come through on your blog still to this day. So I hope our listeners are going to take the time to go check it out if they haven't already heard of you, because your blog is really wonderful and we love reading it. One of the things we wanted to ask you about is that you are one of those sewists who seems to be sewing all the time. You are always blogging new things and we love seeing that. So is that the case? How do you make the time to sew so much?
I sew on the weekends, believe it or not. I work in New York City and the commute didn't bother me when I was younger, but it really bothers me now. So it's rare that I sew Monday through Thursday. I work from home on Fridays, so I get a jump now. I usually start Friday evening. But then there's some weekends, all weekend goes by and I sew nothing. So, but mostly I sew on the weekends.
So you must be a quick sewist too then.
No.
No? Oh, okay.
No. I think it appears to be quick because it seems like I turn out so much. But when I count how many garments I've made at the end of the year, I'm usually between 40 and 50. It's not a lot of pieces. If you think about it, that's not even one a week.
I think that some of our listeners would be amazed that you made 50 pieces in a year, but I can understand how that wouldn't like seem like a lot in the grand scheme of things.
Yes, but I know people who make 75 or 100 in a year because they have the whole summer off. Like they teach school and they have the whole summer off so they can just sew and that their output is greater.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, everyone has a different level, right? So we know that you identify as a plus-sized fashionista, and we have lots of listeners who we know are going to be really inspired by you. And we would love if you could share some of your favorite pattern companies or maybe specific favorite patterns that you like to sew.
Okay, so I need to give you a little backstory here. I have been sewing for a very long time. So to me, the big four are home. Butterick, McCall's, Vogue, Simplicity, that's home to me. And normally my first choice. I've sewn with them for so long. I know how to adjust them. I know what works for me. So that's where I stop first. I've started to explore some indies. And my favorite indie would be Cashmerette. And for obvious reasons, Jenny is really changing the plus size market. She's really making it so that plus size sewists have a set of basic patterns that they can sew with and take journeys with, which I appreciate. So Cashmerette patterns would be my second most important one. But then I'm learning about some new ones. I mean, I've made four Katie's, Mimi G's pattern. I made three Dear and Delmiosis.
I saw those on your blog. They're so beautiful, especially that one you did with, did you put a little white piping?
Yes.
In the pink floral one? Oh my gosh, it was yes. So pretty.
Yes. So Dear and Doe, Heather's Closet Case, I have two that I want to make. The Cali is still on my pile of things to be sewn. The fabric is there with the pattern. I just haven't gotten there yet. I want to make a Perth dress by Carolyn and Cassie. She's handmade by Carolyn on IG. I really want to make the Perth dress. Again, pattern sitting there with a fabric. I just haven't gotten there. And I've made a grain line studio Tamarack jacket, and I have fabric to make another one because that is one of my favorite jackets to wear. But I wear mine in the wintertime.
I love my Tamarack jacket as well. I wear it all the time.
Yeah, so it was nice. A great jacket. So I have plans to make another one.
Oh, awesome. Well, it sounds like you're getting into the indie sewing pattern scene in a big way now.
Somewhat. I'm going to be honest. Somewhat. My other challenges is after sewing for 50 years or almost 50 years, I own a lot of patterns. So a lot of styles that are coming back out or are really popular with newer sewists, I already own a pattern for. It might even be a pattern that I've sewn or adjusted already. So it's easier to go back and grab that than it is to buy a new one and try one. Mm-hmm. I really like tried and true patterns. I really like sewing one pattern 15 times.
Okay, so I have to ask you now, because we've talked about tried and true patterns on the show before, do you have like a single pattern that you would say is your TNT, or maybe a top three that you could tell us about?
Yes, and all of them are very old.
That's okay.
Okay, so before I got this new job, or before I changed careers, it would have been my dress pattern. And my dress pattern evolved from a very old Butterick pattern from 1993 or something that I just constantly made changes to. My pants pattern, again, a pattern from like 1991 that I got to fit. And as the years have gone by, I've just changed it up, changed the legs, I've made it into shorts. I've made it into culottes. I've just done everything you can to it. But right now, my favorite tried and true pattern would be the mashup I did of Butterick 5, 6, 7, 8. I think that's the right number. And a Vogue out of print pattern, 7700. It's the tried and true pattern I used in April and made the 8 shirts from.
Oh, 8 shirts. Oh my goodness.
Well, see, that's the, when you ask me, how do I sew so much? The reason I can sew so many things is because I use a lot of patterns over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. I think it allows you to be really creative, to step out of the box. You stop worrying about fit choices or the things you have to do to make something fit. You don't have to make it fit every single time. You can just sew. You can lay it down on a piece of fabric, cut it out, and take it to the sewing machine and sew it because you know it's going to fit.
That's such a great point. And I think our listeners can probably take a lot away from what you're saying, because it's true. If you find a pattern that fits you well, love that pattern and stick with it and make adjustments to it and just, you know, really make it a TNT pattern, because it is so much easier to make adjustments to a pattern that you have than find a whole new pattern for maybe a vision that you have in your mind, and then having to go through the whole fitting process again and figuring out if it actually fits you. So I really love that outlook.
It's really like what Helen did with her Winslow culottes. She's made a lot of simple changes to it that totally changes the way the pattern looks when you wear it. But it works because she's making the adjustments to a tried and true pattern.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm a huge fan of tried and true patterns. I think it would cut down so much frustration, sewist experience, if they'd figure out what they like and sew that. And then they could be as creative as they wanted to be.
Yeah, I love hacking patterns. It's so much fun to take something that you know fits and just tweak it and end up with something totally new. And people in the community seem to love reading about it too. So it's still a great way to engage with other people. And I know people always want to try the new thing that comes out, but sometimes you can just do the old ones and make some changes and you're still going to get the same, you know, buzz or excitement from people that you're engaged with online.
Absolutely.
So I'd also love to know where you find your inspiration for the things that you want to make. Are there people in the sewing community that you particularly like to follow for that kind of thing? Or is there some other place that you look to for inspiration for your handmade wardrobe?
I read a book back when I was in my late 30s, and it taught you to look for inspiration everywhere. To look at it in nature, to look at it in the street, to look at it at what other people were wearing, to let your surroundings influence you. And I would say that that's my greatest influence, is what I see around me. Luckily, I work in the garment district now, even though it's a truncated garment district and not as vibrant as it once was. But I do work in the garment district. And some, you know, when coats come off is the best time to look at what people are wearing. So I'm more inspired by what I see around me. That would be my first thing. The second thing would be magazines. I'm a huge magazine person. And I love flipping through those glossy pages and seeing what the editors decide is the thing that we should have. Many times I don't agree with what they pick as a garment to wear, but I'll see a color, or I'll see the way that they tie a blouse, or I'll see something that some way that they've styled it that will kick me off and send me off on a journey. Lots of times lately, I feel like I'm moving at a different direction than the rest of the sewing community. I don't really buy as many new patterns anymore. I have an idea of my in my head of what my style is and what makes me comfortable and what's good to wear, and I kind of flow like that.
Yeah, we wanted to ask you a bit about your style and how you would describe your personal style and what are some of your favorite things to make. I know you love shirt dresses because I see them all the time on your blog, but do you have a kind of vision for your style or a way that you would describe it?
I used to have a vision for my style in the way I describe it, and that really was corporate chic. Now that I work for this company that I love working for, but the dress code really, I really stumbled on the dress code when I first got there, because the dress code is part of their identity. It's a factor in their hiring process, even that casual, it doesn't matter what you wear. We know that it's more about what you know and how you perform. And if you're very comfortable coming to work in your pajama bottoms, well, hey, come on in and do your job. So it took me a while to figure out who I want to be in this new landscape. So mostly I'm casual, not even business casual, because I wear sneakers almost every day, which is like mind-boggling to me since I really like heels and pumps. So I've been titling my clothing like Chico's Chic, because the women in the the women in the Chico's ads always have on like a cardigan and a top and a pair of jeans or a slim fitting pair of pants. And that's basically what I've moved to. It's like a cardigan, a shirt, jeans or slim pants and sneakers.
Awesome. Okay. Sidebar, Carolyn, I know this question wasn't on the list, but you have mentioned a couple times your new job, and I'm totally curious. What do you do? What is your day job?
So I used to be an executive assistant, a C-level suite assistant in an investment banking firm, but it was a boutique investment bank firm. Like, I didn't work for one of the major ones. I worked for one of the small boutique ones. And the dress code was very, very corporate. Like, we had to wear stockings and we had to wear pumps. And when we had meetings, they liked the women to have their hair down, like really old fashioned corporate.
Whoa.
And now I'm an executive assistant. I work for the president of the company, but I work for a market research firm. And it's a totally different vibe. We rarely have people on site. It's a room full of researchers figuring out what you want to buy, what you want to eat, that kind of thing. And I'm the executive assistant to the president, who wears jeans, a t-shirt, and a motorcycle jacket, a leather motorcycle jacket.
I love that. More casual. So how are you liking dressing more casual on the day-to-day for your career?
Oh my God, I hated it when I first started.
That's so funny. I would have thought it would be like a nice change, you know, but for you, it just felt unnatural or just different.
The difference is when I graduated college, the first thing you got was a brand new suit. I graduated college and my mother took me out and helped me buy two or three suits to interview with. And you wore those suits to death. I was lucky because I could sew. I immediately started adding pieces to them. But you wore a suit. You wore pantyhose. You wore pumps. When I first started working, you didn't even wear sneakers to work and then change into your pumps. You wore pumps everywhere. So when I first started working, women were just being allowed to wear pants to work. I'm old, people.
It is really hard to imagine, especially now that there's so many people working, you know, remotely or working at, you know, tech companies where the vibe is so casual, and even offices are more casual than they used to be in a lot of cases. So it's kind of hard to imagine having to wear pumps to work.
When I first started working, I worked a typewriter. Okay. That when they introduced computers, there were some women so scared that they ended up quitting because they didn't want to have to move to a computer.
Okay.
So wow. I've had a long work history of dressing up. You did not come to work without stockings on. You were sent home. And if you were sent home, you weren't paid for it because you should know the dress code. There were rules about how you could wear your hair. Please, I remember working when the first person came in, the first Black person came in, and she had braids in, and she was taken into a room to discuss why she came in with an inappropriate hairstyle.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Oh. Okay, so I'm just trying to say that it was very difficult for me to switch over to that very, very casual, because even when I went to college, we dressed up. I might have worn jeans, but you looked well put together and you didn't roam around looking sloppy. I majored in fashion merchandising in college, and so it was literally a fashion show.
So I'm curious about how sewing kind of relates to your wardrobe, your day-to-day wardrobe, what during your career, and how it sort of had to change when you switched careers. So have you always sewn all of the clothes that you've worn to your jobs, or do you sort of have a mix of ready-to-wear and stuff that you've made for yourself?
Okay, so this is a deviation, and you might not even want to put it on the tape. I'm just going to tell you this story. I started out in fashion merchandising. It was a really closed industry at that time. I had a really hard time getting a job. I really wanted to work in a showroom. So I worked for, you'll love this. I worked for Penthouse Magazine as my first secretarial job because they would hire me.
Oh my God. Oh my God. I don't know what want to know what the dress code was there.
Professional. It was a very professional office, and it was predominantly women because there was so much porn on the walls that it couldn't be men.
Oh my God.
Literally.
Oh my goodness. Wow.
So that was my first job, and as a secretary. I mean, I had had some jobs in fashion, but my real career took off when I became an executive assistant. And I got a job working in a showroom as the executive assistant to one of the senior people. And I loved it because they had a cutting room. But when it came time to get a raise, the person who was in charge of the assistant said I didn't need one. And she said, obviously, I made enough money because I had this amazing wardrobe. So what did they need to give me a raise for?
Oh, my gosh.
The reason I had such a great wardrobe was because the women in the cutting room were slipping me fabric and I was going home and making me new things.
Wow. So did you explain that to them?
Yes. Still didn't get the raise that year, but yes.
And were there other women in your offices or your workplaces that also sewed, or were you kind of a lone wolf?
I was a lone wolf for years. They considered sewing like a home mecky kind of thing, like something that stay-at-home women did. I came of age right in the 70s when women were really going back to work. When women were starting to go out to work and work in office buildings and work with men. And there were stores and clothing lines like Liz Claiborne that was totally targeted towards the working woman and how she could look like dressed like a man, but look like a woman was like one of the taglines. So, no, people didn't sew because you could go to the store and you could buy these amazing clothes and you could look like a man, but still be a woman. Yeah.
It's interesting that
I'm old, people.
I love that you keep saying that. You're not that old, Carolyn. I'm curious because when you said about how people used to sort of look at home sewing is like a home ec-y kind of thing. I even come across that sometimes today when I meet people and tell them that I sew, and they're like, people still sew, really? Like, people just kind of sort of judge you on that. So do you find that that still happens to this day, or do you feel like there's sort of been a shift in people's perception of sewing over the years?
I think it's how it's presented. I think when we first learn to sew, we're just so thrilled, and we sew and we make things, and we don't recognize that we are members of a tribe of artisans. And so I present myself more as an artist. That's why I like the word sewist, because it's a sewing artist to me. I think I treat my garments more as an art form. And so I don't get a lot of pushback now because it's more like an art or a craft. Mm-hmm. When I was younger, I did. I definitely got the, oh, you're the home ec girl, or, oh, you sew kind of thing. At my last job, though, since I used my art form to knock off designer clothes, there was a little more admiration for it.
Yeah, I can imagine. I know for my mother, who's about your age, she started sewing when she got an office job because she wanted to wear those professional pieces, but she couldn't find ones that fit her frame. She has broad right. shoulders, just like me. And she just couldn't find anything that actually looked good and that she felt confident in. And that's why she learned to sew in order to make her own clothes to wear to those office gigs.
And she probably made beautiful things so that people didn't realize she hadn't bought them at the store.
Yeah, exactly.
That used to be a goal. And it used to even be a tagline of the pattern companies, to make your clothes look as ready to wear as possible.
Yeah. I mean, I think now most of the things I see online, it looks better than most ready to wear I see in stores, at least the fast fashion stores that are so prevalent nowadays.
Right. When I was growing up, there was no Walmart. There was no Forever 21. There was no H&M. You went to Lord & Taylor, or you went to Macy's, or you went to JCPenney's, and those clothes cost a little bit more money and were better made than the things that we're seeing now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
This episode is brought to you by Chicken Boots. Chicken Boots creates bags and cases for crafters that focus on functionality.
They use unique materials to enable their bags to stand on their own and stay open, or to be see-through so you can find what you're looking for. All of their designs were created by them, and everything is high quality, washable, and colorful too. Chicken Boots sells and ships worldwide from their website, chickenbootsusa.com.
Their bags and cases are ideal for crafting on the go. Project bags, needle cases, Notion storage, and more.
As a new knitter, I have to say, these bags look like they have features and functions I didn't even know I needed.
Yeah, you mean my knitting bag shouldn't be full of loose needles and stitch markers? Mind blown.
Listeners, you can get 15% off your next purchase from Chicken Boots using the code LOVETOSEW15 at chickenbootsusa.com, and we will link it in the show notes. This offer expires November 8th, 2018. That's chickenbootsusa.com, code LOVETOSEW15.
So I would love to talk a little bit about your sewing space and the area you sew and the kinds of fabrics you like to work with. Can you tell us about your sewing cave, as I've seen you call it?
I call it the cave because it's in the basement. I have no windows, or if I do, they're so high up and I put a bookcase in front of them that there's really no natural light down here. So that's why I call it the cave. This room is the culmination of 50 years of sewing. It's everything that I've always wanted. It's stored the way I've always wanted it to be stored. It is my, literally, if I could sleep down here, I would.
And it would be comfy too, because there's so much padding.
Well, that just lines the walls.
That's true. You need to make a fabric bed.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to have to include some photos in the show notes because you have some photos on your blog of your sewing cave, and that wall of fabric is just magnificent. It is, I would say, hashtag fabric goals. Yeah. So let's talk fabric a little bit. You know, I love talking fabric.
Sure. So
you are definitely a true fabricaholic. I would love to know a little bit more about your stash.
I don't call it a stash. I call it a collection.
Oh, ooh. Right. We love that, of course. So let's talk a little bit more about your fabric collection. The first question we had about it was, do you think you have mostly knits or wovens, or is it kind of a balance between the two?
It's heavier on the wovens than on the knits. I sewed professional garments, and you wore good wools and linens and cottons for suitings. You didn't wear knits for suitings.
Totally. That makes a lot of sense. And I also am curious because you said your collection and your sewing room is sort of a culmination of 50 years of sewing. So what would you say is the oldest piece of fabric in your stash, or the piece that you've had in there for the longest?
I have a piece of Viella Shally that I purchased at 18 years old when I worked at A&S. Which is Abraham and Strauss. It was a department store at the time. And I got the gig through my sewing teacher in high school. And there was a fabric store at the other end of the mall from A&S. And I would literally run from A&S on my 30 minutes lunch break and go touch the fabric and then run back. And then after work, if I got off before the mall closed, I would run down when I got paid and buy a piece of fabric. So my oldest piece is from when I was 18 years old. I can put my hands on it right now in the collection on the wall. And I've had it. I can't cut it. I will probably have it put in the casket with me when I die.
Oh, can you describe it to us? Does it have a print on it?
Yes, it's blue, gray, and it's a paisley print.
That's so wonderful. It really is. I think your fabric stash, I'm using air quotes, is kind of the definition of a fabric collection. We've talked about that on the show before, how you have to kind of look at it as collections that you can keep for your whole life and then pass on, you know. And,
or take to your grave.
Take to the grave.
Never thought about it, but I'm into it.
I'm so into that. Okay. Line my casket with fabric, please.
So I heard of a quilter who, when she passed, the members of her quilt guild each put a quarter yard in the casket with her before she was buried. And I thought that was the coolest thing ever. See, I'm a crazy person. I thought that was the coolest thing ever.
You're among people. Yeah. We don't think you're crazy. I'm like taking notes. This is a great idea.
In my will, there are three pieces designated that are to be put in the coffin with me.
In your will.
In my will. And my daughters know the three pieces.
Oh my gosh.
And that Shally piece is one of the pieces that will be buried with me.
Carolyn, I think you might be some kind of genius. Just putting it out there.
Or
everyone go update your wills.
Or some obsessed crazy person.
Not to us. Oh man. Okay, so you have a lot of fabric. We've established that. And you also mentioned that you have it organized the way that you want it to be organized. So can you tell us a little bit more about how you have it all organized and sorted out?
My fabric is organized by color. Because I think in color when I think up ideas. I don't think, oh, I need a wool. I think I need a blue wool. So my fabric is organized by color. So there's shelves and shelves of black and shelves of brown. And then there are these amazing shelves of prints because, you know, everybody needs a print. So there are shelves and shelves of print. So when people come over and you pull the curtains back and they get to look at everything, it is amazing how they migrate to the print section because it's just this explosion of color.
Yeah, it's not surprising at all. That's where I always go in the fabric store first because it's the most fun. And I love collecting unique prints. It's just, yeah, makes me so happy.
Prints, they're wonderful. They can change your mood.
And how do you, you mentioned, you know, thinking of a color when you think of a project. And I would love to hear a little bit more about how you plan your sewing projects. Do you start with a pattern? Do you start with a fabric? How do you usually get going?
An idea. It's definitely an idea. I'll see something or I'll realize as I'm getting dressed one morning that I'm missing t-shirts. So then it becomes t-shirts, pick a pattern, and then look for the fabrics in the collection. Do I want printed t-shirts? Do I want solid color t-shirts? Do I want to put two different pieces of fabric together to make my own hybrid fabric? That's how I think. Idea first, fabric second, pattern next.
I like that. I like the fabric before the pattern. I'm usually the other way around, pattern and then fabrics. So it's always interesting to hear what other people do.
I think when you pick the pattern first and then you go look for the fabric, it narrows down your choices. At least for me, when I start with the idea and then pick the fabric, then it opens it up to any kind of pattern if I don't have a specific idea in mind.
Mm-hmm. It's true. It's true. Depending on the fabric, you pick a pattern that's going to work with that type of fabric. I love that. fabric. Let's keep talking about fabric.
Literally, that is what drives my sewing is fabric. It's why I own so much of it. Because it's the fabric that drives it. I feel like you can come up with a pattern or you can hack a pattern or there's a way to get the silhouette that you want. But fabric is the thing. It's like paint to a painter. If you have no paint to put on that canvas, your idea is not coming forth.
Oh, that's such a beautiful analogy. I love that. And as someone who truly embraces their fabric collection, I would love for you to tell our listeners maybe how they can get on that bandwagon and ditch the guilt around their fabric stash, because we hear it all the time from people. They feel negatively about how they have so many materials and they're not following through with their make. So how do you handle that? Or how do we just let that all go?
That train of thought, honestly, is mind-boggling to me. And I'm not saying that because I'm trying to put someone down for their choices, because the best thing about life is free will and you get to do what makes you happy. As long as it's legal, it is mind-boggling to me that your fabric makes you guilty. And then I take it back to the painter analogy. A painter does not feel bad that he has 583 tubes of paint and that 330 of them are white. He just doesn't, or she just doesn't. She or he knows that that's the medium that they need to create the vision that they see in their head. So why would you feel guilty about fabric?
That's exactly what we wanted from you. Like a stern talking to.
Yeah, exactly.
And if I sounded stern, I'm so sorry.
No, it was perfect.
it's really how I think of it. It's how do you even begin to sew if you don't have any fabric?
Yeah, that's true.
The painting analogy strikes again.
Yeah.
So many correlations.
Okay, so a little bit off topic here, but one of the questions that we had written down, which I really do want to ask you, is do your friends and family ask you to make them things all the time? And do you have a go-to response?
Because I need one.
My friends and family no longer ask me to make anything for them because over the years, I have said no so often that they know it's just not happening.
That's fair.
It's not happening.
And what about new people that you meet, you know, coworkers or, you know, new acquaintances? Do people ever ask you to do their mending and stuff like that?
Okay. So the best thing about being old is it's really easy to say no. I don't have time. I have less years in front of me than behind me. So it's really easy to say no. I have no guilt about saying no. Now in my 30s and my 40s, yes, way more guilt, way more worried about will someone like me, way more worried about will I offend somebody. Now I don't care.
That's fair. My mom says the same thing.
And you hear it in your 30s and 40s and you just can't imagine that you would be that way. Yeah, there's something that kind of flicks over in you at a certain age and you just don't care. And because you told me to be clean, I'm not saying what I really say.
That's perfect. All right. So you've been blogging for 12 years?
Yes.
Is that what you said? Yeah, 12 years. And sewing since you were 11. So that's almost 50 years. Let's just reiterate that again. You're old. Not that old, though. But we wanted to know, how have you kind of kept that magic alive over the years? Has sewing always played such a big role in your life, or has it sort of ebbed and flowed over the years?
It has always played a big role in my life. There's only two times that I stopped sewing for about a year: when my dad died and when I got divorced. Those are the only times I stopped sewing. I sewed up until the day I gave birth for all three children. I sewed after I had those children. I sewed in college. I had a sewing machine in my college dorm room. I bought my first really great sewing machine, the kind my mother wouldn't buy for me, as a sophomore in college. I have sewn since I was 11 years old. And I don't know why I don't have a magic thing to tell you, do this, do this, do this, and you will sew. You will continue to sew. No, sewing is an essence of me. I can't not sew for 2 weekends in a row. I get grouchy. I am evil. It's the way I express myself.
Yeah, I can completely relate to that. Anytime I have to go away, I always miss my sewing machine and I think about it. Yes! I dream about it.
I don't understand people who cannot sew for months at a time, unless there is a reason why your sojo has fled. I can understand that, because like I said, when I got divorced, I stopped sewing. It was a good 18 months. It was a good 18 months. I didn't stop buying fabric, but I did stop sewing. And then again, when
the retail therapies.
Yeah. My mother couldn't quite understand why I was still collecting so much fabric. And then when my dad died, I just think the grief of him passing, I stopped sewing for about a year.
Yeah.
That's understandable. I'm sorry for your loss.
It's been 10 years now, so it's okay.
Yeah. Okay. In the last few weeks, we have noticed a couple of hashtags we've seen them around in the sewing community. And those are person of color or who sews, or POC who sews, and also sew in color. And we are curious about your experience as a woman of color in the sewing community. One of the first things we want to ask you is, how do you think things have evolved from your perspective over the years as a woman of color who sews?
Can we start with I'm old? I think I have a different perspective because I had to live through the prejudice of it all. So it became ways you maneuvered around it. It's how you learn to live your life. The amazing and wonderful and beautiful thing about the sewing community now is that everyone gets a voice. I love those hashtags like so queer and hashtag so over 50 or hashtag. Isn't there one about mental health sewing too? Oh, sewing heels, where they've all been wearing the t-shirts and telling their mental health stories. And then the people who sew with disabilities, physical disabilities. I love that that is all at the forefront. I love that everyone is getting a seat at the table. I love that we are all allowed to be exactly who we are and to share the craft that we love. I love that. I didn't grow up that way. So when you ask me a question like, how do you feel about it? I don't have a feeling. I had to learn to navigate that minefield. So it became a part of who I was. And it's not even something you think about anymore. It's like being the only Black person in an office full of white people. You learn to navigate it. You don't get upset about it. You don't rail against it. You just try to be the best Black person you can be working in that office. So, because you understand that you're representing a race of people to another race of people who don't even understand. Which has like totally taken us away from sewing and it's gotten really heavy. But again, I'm old. No, and I say that to say that I've experienced so many things, but I love what's happening in the sewing community right now. I really do. I love that everyone gets a seat at the table. I love that we say the craft is what binds us. and it doesn't matter what our differences are, that we should all be included.
Yeah, and I think that's the energy behind these hashtags. And the idea is that it would be really nice to see more of that reflected in the magazines or in the pattern companies, and just get more representation of from everywhere, of all people, in, you know, those more public facing things, like the way that it is in the community. Do you feel that at all?
I think things are changing. Considering the negativity that's in the world today, I think it's very positive that so many companies still want to reach out and touch everyone. So, yeah, I think that's cool. I really like it.
I guess what we want to know, or what we're wondering, is businesses in the sewing community, how they can be more inclusive. And I think that answer might be obvious, so tell us if it is. But I'd love to get your take on that, like how those public-facing companies and organizations or people on, you know, social media or whatever, influencers, how they can be more inclusive.
Okay, I did think of something just now because my friend had said, make sure you say this. The sewing companies are, the sewing machine companies are not as inclusive as, say, fabric companies are, or the magazines are attempting to be. I think it was very interesting when Little Pomegranate did the survey, and then Jillian from The Socialist came behind and showed how Threads does actually have like one person of color every fourth magazine. So there's an attempt being made, but I think that the sewing machine companies are not as inclusive. I think probably Bernina is the best at it because they have people of all colors, men and women, with their sewing machines. But I think the other sewing companies are really lacking in that. They don't really distribute sewing machines to bloggers of color or sewists of color. If you think about it, when was the last time you saw a sewist of color have one of those $10,000 machines just given to them to sew on and blog about? Now, I've seen some people of color get some sewing machines, but they get lower end sewing machines. But I haven't seen a person of color get a $10,000 or a $15,000 sewing machine. What do they think we're going to do with it? Run out and sell it on the corner? I don't know. And that's probably the most negative thing I will say about the sewing community and the sewing industry, is that fact right there. Even Viking Husqvarna is starting to give away sewing machines to people of color. Michelle from Sewn Magazine has one, and then Brittany J. Jones has one. Two very visible people of color with them. But
you mentioned it being a negative comment, and, you know, it's obviously an issue, but I think it's great to bring it up, because this is the whole reason behind having these hashtags come to the forefront, is that it is an issue and that we should be talking about it, and that you should feel free to voice your opinion on the matter, and hopefully they will hear you. And that's the only way that things might change, right?
Hopefully.
I hadn't even thought about it from the perspective of sewing machine ambassadors or the people that work with those sewing machine companies. I was thinking magazine covers, pattern companies, you know, the
advertisements.
Yeah, advertisements, that kind of thing. But yeah, I mean, thank you for mentioning that, because I hadn't even realized that that was an issue. And it's great that we're bringing it up and talking about it.
I think it's a huge thing. We all need a sewing machine to sew on. And it's just amazing to me that people of color do not have those $15,000 sewing machines to do amazing things on. I can count them on one hand, and that's not including Mimi G.
Yeah, absolutely. So I would love to talk about Sewn Magazine, because part of their mission and their brand is to be inclusive. So you have a column in Sewn Magazine. Can you tell us a little bit about this magazine?
I write the Ask Carolyn column in Sewn Magazine. So you send a question in, and I give you an answer. Some things people send are a little too detailed to write in a magazine column, and then some really are great for it. And Michelle has done some great tie-ins to it, like when I wrote a column on interfacing, and then one of the interfacing companies donated a gift to the readers. You know, you had to submit your name, and then one reader won the sample pack. So that's what I do at Sewn Magazine. But I'm just so thrilled that when Michelle put out calls for people to be involved in the magazine, she took me on because my sewing, Michelle to me is an artist, a true artist. Have you seen some of the things she sews for her daughter? They're just like amazing garments. And I don't sew like that. So I thought I was really thrilled when she allowed me to write the column and have the association with the magazine, because I think it's really important that a magazine with more diversity, it has a more artistic slant to it. The women that make those garments in that magazine are just amazing. They're things that I think we as sewists aspire to sew like. And so, yeah, I think Sewn is just wonderful. I know it's a little pricey for some people, but if you can get your hands on a copy, you really should. It's mind-blowing. It'll take you to new heights, make you think of your garments in a new way, and turn you on to some people that you probably normally don't follow or see.
That's awesome. And for our listeners out there who maybe haven't heard about this magazine, is it an online publication or is it like a physical magazine that they can get mailed to them?
They can get it mailed to them, and it's full of pretty glossy pages, which makes my heart feel so great because I love pretty pictures on glossy pages.
How does that feel to be in a magazine with glossy pages when you love magazines so much?
Amazing.
I bet it does. I guess that's an obvious answer.
Amazing. I mean, I've written two columns for Vogue Pattern Magazine, which was really nice. But this is a different kind of thing. To be part of this venture is just totally different. I think, like I said before, I think Michelle is amazing. I think the magazine is amazing. To repeat the word one more time, I think the women that make the garments for the magazine are visionaries, and they're all types of women. They're plus size, they're thin, they're white, they're of Hispanic descent. I mean, she has really gathered together a group of sewists that represent all of the sewing community.
Well, you're really selling it. So we're definitely going to link this magazine in the show notes for all of our listeners who are, I'm sure, really excited to check it out. Check out the show notes and we'll link to it. But we did want to ask you a little bit more specifically about your column, because we feel like you must get all kinds of questions. And I'm sure it gives you kind of a peek into the sewing community's biggest questions and worries and thoughts. So based on the questions you receive through this column, do you have any maybe advice or thoughts that you would like to throw out to the community?
Well, first, I'd like to say, can more people send questions to askcarolyn@sewnmagazine.com? Because I'm starting to run out of questions. That's my first thing.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Our listeners will be on that, right, listeners?
Yes, get on it. Oh, my gosh.
Okay. And then the second thing I would say is that most of the questions I get are about fitting, because we're all striving to get that perfect fit, to make those garments we make fit us better than anything we could buy and ready to wear. So I would say most of the ones I get are about fitting. I haven't written a lot about fitting because fitting is so subjective, at least to me. I think that we should not tell people things are too tight or too loose or too, you don't know people's backstories. And if someone wants to wear a garment a little tighter than the next person, then they wear it tighter. Or if someone wants to wear a garment a little looser than the next person, then they wear it looser. I think where fit comes in, where there are rules that apply, are like crotch curves or bust darts, my pet peeve, bust darts, or where your shoulder meets, that the sleeve fits at the juncture of your shoulder, taking proper measurements. That's really important, so that you can determine how much ease, or learning what is the right amount of ease for your lifestyle. It's all fit. Those are all fit things, and I think that's where the most questions come into play.
Mm-hmm. And it must be challenging, because I'm sure that the emails you get are probably long when it comes to describing fit issues. Maybe they even send you pictures and things like that.
No, actually they don't.
Oh, really? They don't?
They don't. I've got.
Oh, that's even more challenging.
I've gotten a few questions on specific fit that are very difficult to write a magazine article or a column for because it's a specific fit question. Mm-hmm. Most of what I've written for the magazine are techniques because the other thing is we all want to know how to do a technique. Mm-hmm. So most of what I've written about is technique or fabric and then a few simple things about fit, but nothing detailed.
It's an ongoing process.
I think you need a magazine article on fit.
So as far as techniques and kind of tips go, we were hoping that you could share maybe your favorite sewing tip with our listeners.
Okay. My tip is not a technique. It's not what you would think it's going to be. My tip is more aspirational or informative. We see so many sewists who are afraid to cut into a piece of fabric, afraid to use a pattern, afraid to try a style, just concerned that they're going to waste their valuable resource. And my tip is just do it. Just do it. Because even if it turns out bad, you will have learned something. And gaining the experience is what propels you to the next level. So if you just do it, be fearless. It's just fabric. You can buy another piece. It's just a pattern. There is another one that you can either print off or you can buy at the store or you can trace off. Just do it.
Ditch the fear. I love that.
Just do it.
It's a great tip. That's a great tip. So we kind of wanted to wrap up the interview with a little bit of a broader question because it's not often that we get to talk to somebody who has been sewing for so long. I have to fit that in one more time. But can you just sort of tell us why it is that you are so passionate about sewing and also so passionate about sharing it with the world on your blog and through this column and all of that?
I think it's because to me, sewing isn't just about picking a piece of fabric or a pattern and then going through the steps to end up with a garment. Sewing is so much more to me. It's an art form. It's a creative drive. It's like fuel to my soul. And that sounds so crunchy, goodness-y kind of thing. But really, that's what it is. And it's like something that wells up inside of me and that has to come out. Back to my painter's analogy, sort of like I can see something in my mind's eye and I need to create it, like a painter sees something that he needs to paint on a canvas. Just my canvas is fabric and my sewing machine is my brushes and thread is the paint, I guess, or fabric is the paint. And the reason why I want to share it is because so many of us can do it, but we're not encouraged to do it. And it seems like it's this hard thing that's unattainable. And it's why I try to break it down on my blog and show you pictures of the alterations and show you how you can use a fabric a different way, because I want you to get what I feel about sewing. So that's it in a nutshell.
That's wonderful. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. And to end us off, can you tell our listeners where they can find you online?
Everything is Diary of a Sewing Fanatic. I made it simple for you. My blog is Diary of a Sewing Fanatic. Perfect. My Instagram account is Diary of a Sewing Fanatic. My Pinterest is Diary of a Sewing Fanatic. And I hate the Facebook, so no real Facebook account.
The Facebook, I love it. Well, we'll definitely link all of that in the show notes. And thank you so much, Carolyn, for coming on the show. You truly enrich the sewing community. We're so lucky to have you. I hope our listeners, if they haven't heard of you, they will go check you out. You're awesome. So thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you so much for inviting me. It's really a privilege. And I'm just speechless that you thought I was worthy to be on the show. So thank you.
Oh my God. You were on our list from day one, Carolyn. You really were. We love you.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Well, you take care.
All right. You too. Have a great evening.
Bye.
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 That's it for today's episode of Love to Sew. Thank you to our sponsor, Chicken Boots. Go to chickenbootsusa.com and use the code LOVETOSEW15 for 15% off your next order.
We're recording today in rainy Vancouver, Canada, and you can get in touch with us and get links for everything we talked about in this episode at LOVETOSEWpodcast.com.
It's definitely not raining. It was dark. I can't see what it is, but it's probably not rainy. It was so beautiful today. If you're loving the show and you want to help us out, you can support us on Patreon. Contribute $5 or more a month and you'll get access to our bonus episode feed. Go to patreon.com/lovetosew for more info.
You can find me, Caroline, at blackbirdfabrics.com and Helen at helenscloset.ca. And our show is produced by Sam Humphrey.
Thank you, Sam.
Thank you all so much for listening, and we will talk to you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
My bad.
Okay. Where's the outro?
What'd you call me when I forgot my headphones? I had to put away my headphones. You're like, good work, Ace.
Way to go, Ace.
Way to go, Ace.